Oh my days, brothers and sisters, welcome back to the Matchnet Podcast. It's your boy Benji, Benjamin Uyama. I am so grateful for you guys because I received an email from one of you fine sisters that requested this topic for you guys today. I'm going to show you a picture of true parents, and then we're going to get some words from true parents. But today, thank you, mother, father. Oh, we're going to be talking about how to prepare for matching in your 20s. Thank you, sister. Thank you so much for reaching out and with this topic. And we're going to be touching on some touchy, edgy topics: faith, finance, health, fitness, career, all this stuff. I was like, I shouldn't talk about this stuff, but I'm going to talk about it because you asked. All right. So let's dive right in, shall we? I think this time, let's go through true mother's words. We're going to go to true father. And then if you guys want to jump off because you don't want to hear my commentary, you can do so at that time. But if you want to stick around, then let's do that. Okay, so let's preface this. How do you not prepare well for marriage? How do you mess things up royally, all right? What do you do that the average person does? Let's look at average rates, okay? The U.S., the current U.S. statistic on divorce is 45 to 50% for overall all marriages, all right? And that's a 2024 stat. 45%, 50% of marriages end in divorce, okay? And that's not to scare you guys, and that's not to pick on America. It's just that we like picking on America, and it's probably representative of most countries, all right? You can look at your own country's stats to get into it. And then we have the fact in reality that 25% of all children in the U.S. live without a father. A whole quarter of all children in the U.S. live without a father in the home. And that's a 2022 census study. So what does this say about the average way that people are doing things? What does this say about the average way that people are going about preparing for marriage, finding a spouse, and committing to an eternal partner? Well, if you want to divorce and have a high likelihood of divorce and have a fatherless home, then by all means, by golly, do find a spouse that just makes you happy, that has no real commitment in faith or eternity. Do sleep around because of compatibility, right? You got to make sure that you're compatible with the person that you're having sex with. So you got to sleep around, right? Do divorce them, though, as soon as they don't fit your specifications and your needs and your desires and what you want with your life. Do spend all your days, guys, hustling, working hard, making money, and making external things your top priority, because you're guaranteed, Uncle Benji guaranteed to suffer. Do have one kid, not a few, one child, just one, and let the internet and the local school system raise that child. Do that, all right? This is the best way to ruin your relationship. Or have no kids. You know what? For a matter of fact, why don't you get one dog or two dogs and three cats? No, get as many dogs as you could possibly afford. Yeah, that's what we're going to do. Okay? And focus primarily on having a comfortable life and making it and hustling and working hard and making everything, all your dreams come true from an external perspective. That is how we're going to do it. Okay. I hope you dig this. That is actually how you would probably not want to do things. So that's helpful, I think, perspective just on what we should focus on. And I think what we should focus on and what mother and father says. Let's go into this. True mother, she gave this speech in Washington, D.C., March 1998. Why is marriage necessary? We must love the things of the material world, which includes our physical world and the food which nourishes it. We should not claim to love God, whom we cannot see, unless we love the things of creation, which we can see. By loving all things, we absorb the essence of the creation. By doing this, we love and nourish the physical body. Your first parents, of course, are your physical parents. Your second parents is the earth. From the earth, we receive essential elements, which the body needs in order to grow. In this way, the earth is a second parent. After being nurtured and cared for by our second parent, we prepare to meet our third parent. There is a process through which we pass in order to realize this. That process is our physical death. We do not meet our third parent free of charge. To be able to return to our third parent, we must resemble our original parent, God. Why then do we get married? Very simply, we marry in order to resemble God. God exists as a being of dual characteristics. In God, the dual characteristics are completely harmonized as one. When God's dual characteristics manifest in our world, they do so as man and woman. Accordingly, at the proper time, a man and a woman are like a seed. They unite to become one. Thus, husband and wife return to God. Together, we are a reflection of his original nature. We need marriage because it is the true way to develop our love. In marriage, we ripen as a seed of God. Our entire life should be centered on true love. We should be born in love. We should grow in true love. We should live centered on true love. And we should return to true love when we die. The way of true love is life for the sake of others. This is the purpose of a holy marriage. If we take any other path, we are taking the wrong direction for eternal life. There are over 5 billion people living in this world at present. Why? Yet there are not many among the world's population who understand the meaning of the blessing. My husband and I have been the first to adopt the word blessing in the context of marriage. Many such marriage blessings have not been conducted. Where will humanity head in the future? Humanity cannot enter the kingdom of God without passing through the gate of the blessing. There are millions of Christians in our world today, and Christianity will enter the kingdom of God by passing through the gates of the blessing. Some people complain that Reverend Moon's teaching is self-righteous. Of course, nothing can be done about his point of view since it is their own. Of course, nothing can be done about this point of view because it is their own. Nonetheless, I am here to convey the message that the unification marriage blessing is the true road for all marriages. No matter how much persecution it may cause, we are to connect the spirit world and the physical world in our lives. Through this blessing, we can connect earth and heaven and enter the kingdom of heaven. Other religious people think of salvation in terms of the individual. They believe that as long as their faith is strong, they can enter the kingdom of heaven as individuals. But from the viewpoint of God's original ideal, we were never intended to enter the kingdom of heaven as single people. We enter only with our loving spouse and family. The marriage blessing and the eternal life is bestowed through true parents. Through our union of the true parents, we can fulfill God's original hope for the individual, the family, the nation, the world, and the entire cosmos. Ultimately, we can complete God's ideal of creation. Thus, the birthplace of true parents is the starting point for humankind to find our true home. This is the starting place for the kingdom of God on earth and in heaven. With this foundation in place, we can welcome an era in which God is our sovereign. The society which does so will never perish. It will continuously prosper and reach its fullest strength. I sincerely ask that you contemplate deeply about the meaning of this sermon. If you practice it, you will find the way to receive God's abundant blessing and eternal life. May God truly bless you. Thank you very much. How do you guys feel hearing this sermon, this message from True Mother? What stands out to you? What is her emphasis? Where is her heart when she's delivering this? Okay, reflect it, pause it, write some notes, talk to somebody, talk to your team, your parent if you need to, if you're listening to this with someone. And then we'll go on to True Father. I must say, though, on a personal level, this book was the impetus for my success in finding my match. I brought this book with me to Chumpyeong right before the blessing, and every word spoke to me. It's the red book. You might have seen it in your church or in your home. It's called God's Will in the World. It's this red book. There is some very detailed practical advice that I received about preparing for matching and blessing that I really took to heart here. And so I hope to that you can receive it with the same heart that I was able to, or better. All right. This is Father's speech in Tokyo, Japan, February 4th, 1969. Let's do it. Okay. Quote, "The search for the ideal spouse has been a problem throughout history, not only in today's world, but also in future history. It is and will be important. To begin with, let's think of what the absolute standard of an ideal spouse is. Is it natural for a beautiful woman to be linked with a handsome man? Actually, it isn't. According to the principle, marriage should be a vital part of the process of restoration. Since the true spouse or husband and wife relationship that God intended was lost, the world has become such a troublesome one. How can we restore it? A man would welcome having a woman with whom he can be happy. Likewise, a woman would like to have a man with whom she can rejoice. In addition, their relationship should be one in which God and all things could find happiness. All the environment, all the existing things would become excited to see such a couple and would naturally respond to them. Birds would sing to the couple and butterflies would fly joyfully around them. In this phenomenal world, God rejoices, man rejoices, and all things rejoice, down to the smallest insects. If your ancestry had started from this position, we would have had an ideal world. A girl who has an image of a boy whom God loves, and a boy has the image of a girl who is beloved by God. When they praise or uplift each other, God also rejoices, and all things rejoice. The standard of joyfulness depends upon whether they can embrace each other in heart and have the kind of value in which heaven and earth together can rejoice. A man and woman who embrace each other are themselves the place where the universe can unite and all and are God's ideal image. This was God's hope for the original world of creation. However, because of the fall, the first man and woman cut their relationship with God and with all things. They came to be a self-centered attitude about love, to embrace each other and have a relationship as they wished without the blessing of God. Anyone who thinks this way, even today, is actually trapped in Satan's territory and is controlled by the power of Satan. You must understand this. This problem is especially noticeable in Japan, which has now become more westernized. There are many young people among the members here. So you must understand the reality of restoration through life in our group, where we live as brothers and sisters. You must hang on firmly to your purity. The reason why God's will was not accomplished was because of the fall between man and woman. Therefore, a man by himself cannot correct or restore history to follow God's will. A man and woman must cooperate and work together for God's will. And from that point, we can deal with society and national problems as an issue of restoration. Without this cooperation, we cannot restore either the nation, world, or commerce. This is our conclusion. Only a man and woman who take responsibility for true cooperation and accomplish it faithfully can form a relationship with each other through God's love. Until now, this has only been a hope in God's mind. The fall took place in the intermediate stage of growth. The beginning of the fall, the fallen world, is the result of Adam and Eve embracing each other under the control of the archangel's love. The history of the world, which has been passing through a long process of restoration, has become the history of agony. We must restore it. All right. And then the rest of the speech, the rest I'll read after we finish, okay? At the end of this episode. All right. So brothers and sisters, how do you feel? What's the common theme you notice between what mother's sharing, what father's saying? What is it? One thing I've noticed is that they're both emphasizing that the unit of man and woman, not man or woman, the unit of the blessing, the blessed couple and the blessed family, is what will create substantial Chanukuk, that will create the nation, the world, the cosmos that God has intended. It's the blessing. It's the blessing. That's it. Okay. So that's how I'm feeling. I'm pumped about this. And then I'll read this passage for you guys, which is also super, super helpful and tactical. All right. So I'm going to give you guys some overall guidance, and then we're going to get into some more practical things on faith, finance, health, career, etc. Especially for you guys that are young, in your 20s or earlier, teens even, and are preparing for matching blessing. And then I'll share my story a bit. So we're going to talk about internal versus external preparation. We're going to talk about health and fitness, physical fitness. We're going to be talking about finance, money. Trust me, it's not what you think. We're talking about career and schooling. in the context of the blessing, in the context of what mother and father are sharing. So this is how Benjo prepared. I wrote Benjo here because it's funny, and some of you guys will laugh because you know what Benjo means in Japanese. I just think it's cool. Uncle Benjo. All right, so my story is quite simple, but it's meaningful to me and it might be helpful. When I was 16 years old, I had a massive faith conversion experience in which, until I was 16, the only thing I cared about in my life were Pokemon, Power Rangers, and that's it. It was just like Pokemon, and then I got into breakdancing when I was 12, and I started playing guitar, and that was my whole life. It's like breakdancing, Pokemon, and guitar. And then when I was 16 years old, I decided to kind of take my life into my faith into my hands. And I was just curious because every time I went to workshops, they were always talking about God's love and God's heart and all this stuff, true parents. And I didn't feel any of that. I had no emotional reaction to any of that stuff. So I was really curious. I was curious. And so I went to a gap year program. Shout out to BTA. BTA was my conversional experience. And I love those guys with all my heart. When I was 16 years old, I went for a year. And I went deep. I went really deep into myself, journaling, hundoke. And I just tried to come with a conclusive answer of who is God? Who is God to me? Where is God? What's my relationship with God? Like many of you guys have gone through that process. But it was through that I decided, through that 1 year from, I don't even know if God exists. I just care about breakdancing and looking cool and impressing girls, basically, to man, my faith is my number one priority in my life. And so when I had that switch through that 1 year process, I decided I want to get blessed. It was just a decision. It's like, I want to get blessed. I don't know when, I'm just going to get blessed. And so I decided to just prepare by doing a condition. I did a few conditions. And one of the things I started while I was on that gap year program is I started doing a 40-day bow condition. And some people like bowing conditions. I do it because it's like a physical thing that is hard and requires discipline. And I decided to do 40 days every day until the day I'm blessed. That was my condition. I was like, until the day I'm blessed. And so so I did it every day without fail, almost missed one day, which I'll talk about in a second. And with that, naturally was like, you know, I have to have sexual integrity. That was my big thing. That was my big preparation. And I would say that's probably one of the most important things I decided to do was just give up, you know, ogling at women, checking out things online that I shouldn't be looking at, watching porn, masturbating, all the things that I was doing before my conversion experience. I was like, I can't be associated with any of that anymore. Why? Because that's not the husband I want to be. If I want to take the blessing seriously, it doesn't operate. I can't operate in the realm of that being part of my life at all. And so I just was like, I can't do it. And so I just really, really, I was just crazy, nuts, wild, over the top, Super Saiyan mode, faith. And okay, I would wake my parents up every day at 5 or 6 o'clock. I don't remember if it was 5 or 6. I would start waking them up after I came back from BTA. I was like, you guys, we got to do hundoke. We did conditions and conditions. And I just was like, I got to have sexual integrity. So that was about 2 years. It turned out to be 2 years. I thought it was going to be much longer, but I had this opportunity to go to a matching ceremony with true parents. Father and mother were doing matching ceremonies, and there's this opportunity to get matched. And I was like, to be honest, it wasn't a hard decision for me. People think 18 is young, and when I think about it now, I do believe that it's pretty young from a maybe objective perspective. Well, I take that back. But for me, you have to understand, I was in such a mode of, I just want to get blessed. Like, all I care about is having a blessed family. That's the only thing that matters to me. Because I've been reading these words from Father, right? Talking about how the blessing is the solution to humanity and it's what's going to change the world and nation. And I was like, what else matters besides this and having a family? And so I was 100% all in with my mindset there. And so when the opportunity came to get blessed, I, honest to God, didn't even think I was young. As an 18-year-old, I didn't even cross my mind. So when people ask me today, like, why did you get blessed so young? My simple answer is I didn't think it was young. I just wanted to get blessed, and that's all I knew. And so I just went for it as soon as the opportunity came. And it was just a clear decision for me. And so leading up to that time, the conditions that were the most helpful was actually not the bowing condition. It was, let's see, the most helpful one was doing a hundoke with my parents, where we would read Chun Sung Yong together. I would read with them. They would kind of sit on the couch and I would sit at their feet. And then I would read just one page, simple, about the blessing, about blessed families. And then I would report to them kind of how, what I learned from that reading. And then we'd have dialogue about it. And I would try to understand what I was reading rather than just read. I would try to really deeply get it. And that was probably the most impactful thing, because it helped with the unity and trust between me and my parents. It helped kind of restore some bad blood between us in the past. It helped to center myself in our family. And it helped me to understand, you know, God's word more. So that was the most impactful thing. We did a 40-day condition. I think I did two or three. I did two or three rounds of that. That's what I did. It worked for me. And then the second most impactful condition I did was fundraising. I fundraised my way to make the cash, $3,000 cash, US dollars, to pay for a flight to Korea for the blessing, and also to, all the things associated with getting blessed, $3,000. And I fundraised that stuff. It took me a bit of time, I would say a few years to do it, because I only did it on Friday afternoons. But I did it consistently, and that was preparation wise. It was fantastic, because if you fundraise with an intention of loving people as brothers and sisters, as preparation to be in a relationship, then all of a sudden you kind of see everyone from different lens. And that's what really helped me to break down concepts and barriers about women, about men, about what I believe is the right thing to do or right person. And I think it really opened my heart and mind to accept anyone and really love anybody. Because at that point, when I got matched and blessed, it was like, I was ready for anything, right? You can understand my mindset, all the words that Father's talking about, you know, being willing to be matched with anybody. I was in that mindset 100%. And so when I went to Korea for the matching ceremony, You can understand the delightful surprise that I had when Father asked us to choose our own spouse out of nowhere, out of left field. Okay. And so just as context, the whole reason anyone goes to Father's matching is because I can't do it on my own. Like, that's why people get matched by two parents, is like, I don't trust myself. I'm going to screw up. I'm going to choose the wrong person. And therefore, I'm going to get matched by the Messiah. Like, that's why people go to True Parents. And so you can imagine when he was like, you know what? I match you guys. You don't take ownership. This is what he said. He's like, I match you. You don't take ownership. You break your blessing. You should match yourselves. And if you do that, you'll never break your blessing. Right? And that was the premise of his decision. And we don't know if it was planned yet or not. I have no idea. But my gut feeling after being there and actually being through a few of those as staff late in later years, my gut feeling is that I think that he just decided in the moment, or maybe like right before. I don't think anybody had any clue about what was going on. And people were like frantically like, are you sure? But here's the thing, though. Like, if you go to Father's matching, you are accepting whatever he decides. That is the baseline assumption you're going with. And so when I was faced with that decision, he was like, okay, here's 70 plus women, choose one. My thought was like, well, this is the same dude that I'm putting my eternal life partner in the hands of. And if he's telling me that if I choose someone and God will support my original mind and I'll make it work, I believe him, because that's the same guy I'm putting my life into. So let's do this. And so it was a crazy 5 minutes. It was probably less than 5 minutes from, you know, standing in front of 70 plus women to me reaching out to someone and then going home with her and getting blessed, right? There's a whole story in that whole thing, what was going on in my mind. There's a whole episode I did on that, a particular thing. You can check that out. But I think it's helpful actually for people that are not going to True Parents Matching, but are, you know, doing family matching processes, parents matching. And the helpful thing is that, well, you have to have, it's the same mindset that I recommend that everyone has, which is an absolute emptying of yourself, an absolute emptying of what I think I know, and not using my analytical brain to understand, but really following my spiritual original mind and gut, and trusting that If you have the true intentions in heart, you will make the right decision and God will support you. I've had this conversation with so many people recently that are in a dilemma of, do I get matched? Do I not? Do I say yes? Do I say no? Do I continue with this matching process or not? Do I go to the blessing this April? Do I not? And the conversation always ends up in the same conclusion, which is I look at them and I say, like, dude, honey, your intentions are pure. You want what is best for God. You want what is best long-term for your blessing, for your family, for your future children. You want what is best for your lineage. Don't doubt your intentions. You have the purest heart you can imagine. So just decide, and that will be it. God will support you. All right? God will support you. And I specifically ask people this question. If you had an option, let's say, you know, you had an option. Your true mother gave you an option between a, you know, 10 out of 10 gorgeous individual that has personality and character, charismatic, and everybody will like you because of your association with having such a great looking spouse, right? Let's be real. And they will uplift your ego tremendously, but their faith is meh, you're not so confident that they're going to really last. You're not so confident that they really understand a true relationship with God. You kind of feel like their parents are pushing them a little bit. You don't have any meaningful conversations with them when you're talking. It's mostly about career and where you're going to live and stuff that doesn't matter, that you don't think matters at least. Or you have an option. This is the second option. You have an average looking person that's well put together, not ugly, not homely, just well put together, but average. Just average, okay? They're healthy, they're average. Average personality, average character, not charismatic, not over the top, no personality. Well, a little personality, not really. But their faith is rock solid. And you see that. And you're 100% sure that if you were blessed with this person, God will be at the center of your relationship. True parents would be the center. Faith will never evade you in your relationship. You're so certain of it. Which one do you choose? Which one do you choose, my friend? I'll tell you right now. If you choose the one that has the internal set, if that's your decision, that means your heart is pure, your intentions are pure. That's what that means. Because you're thinking long-term. If you guys are thinking long-term, beyond just the next 10, 20 years, beyond just your lifetime, then it means you have good intentions and God will support you. Your original mind will support you. And that is the only advice that your father gave to us when I chose my spouse. The only advice, my friends. He said, choose someone and God will support you. That's the first thing he said. Choose someone and God will support you. And when he said that, I got it. I understood what he was doing. I understood what he was saying. He was saying that I can trust my original mind. My heart is pure. I can trust myself. And so when he said that, I was like, okay, let's do this. Looked through 70 plus women. Each one of them, I looked in the eyes or tried to. To be honest, most of them were looking at their feet or crying. That's what I remember. Most of them were freaking the hell out. All right? Of course they are. Wouldn't you? True father said, okay, choose your spouse. Men, go choose a woman. Actually, to be fair, he said, women, choose a man. First, he said, women, go look at the men and choose a man. That's the first thing he did. Guess how many women actually approached someone? Zero. We waited and waited. Zero women. All right? And so he said, okay, let's change it up. Men, go choose a woman. And so we're faced with all these women and we're looking at them. I look at them one at a time because now I'm feeling, okay, I got it. I understood what Father's doing. I'm looking one at a time. And I'm just thinking, who is really standing out to me? Gut feeling, gut reaction. Who is the one that's just standing? At this point, there's no thinking, by the way. It's just instinct. It's just instinct. Who's standing out to me? One by one. Most of them were looking down, so I couldn't see their eyes. Most of them were emotional, scared, crying. All right? And I went through all of them, and I closed my eyes, and I thought, okay, I got to go around again, because you're supposed to go around and just look until you find someone. And then I was looking, closing my eyes, like, who stood out to me? Who's like my gut feeling? And there's only one that stood out in my mind. There was only one. Why? Because she was the only one looking at me in the eyes, confidently, without anything, with a little smile on her face. like a smile, like a peaceful smile. She was looking at me as I was passing by. She was looking at me like this, looking at me in the eyes. And I remembered her. And she had very clear eyes, a very clear face. And I remembered her. And then my instinct was, that's a woman of faith. If a woman can go through that experience and be told by a true father, you choose your spouse, and then stand there with a bunch of other women in front of men that are looking at them one by one, if that woman can stand there and say, I have faith. I have faith in whatever fathers decide to do and the outcome. I surrender. That's a woman of faith. And so I went around one more time, looked at each one. And when I got to her, I froze. I put my hand out. I put my hand out like this. Put my hand out like this. And then she hesitated for a second. And then she took my hand. And we left happily ever after. No. We were actually the first couple in that group to be matched. We left the room. We tried to go to Father, by the way. We tried to go to Chu Father. And we said, please, we tried to do a Kyungbae. And it's like, look at our couple. You've been doing this for hundreds of thousands of people. Can you please just make sure we're good? Like, did I make a good choice? Did we make a good choice? And he said, see you at the blessing. And then he left. He didn't let us get confirmation. He said, see you at the blessing. And he left the room. And everyone else continued, right? And so Kitoe and I, my wife, left the room. I didn't look at her. I didn't know where she was from, what language she speaks, how tall. I didn't even register to look at her name tag. They have badges to show how old they are, how tall they are, what language, like all that stuff. I didn't even register, think about it. And so when we left the room, I finally looked. And she was like, this is Japan. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, my first thought is, wow, she's beautiful. And the funny thing is, when we were picking, actually, my first thought was I should pick the ugliest person because that's what Father says, right? You should be married to an ugly person and accept that. So I was like, I'm smart. I'm going to pick the ugliest person here. But then I thought, well, she's going to ask me later why I picked her. And she'll never let that down. And so I was like, immediately wisened up. And I was like, that's a stupid idea. And so I just went with gut feeling. And so we left, and then it said Japanese. When we first thought was, wow, she's beautiful. She's very pure. She's got such a pure face. And it said Japan, and I was like, there's only one sentence in Japanese I know at the time, which was, Nihonjin desu ka? Like this, which means, are you Japanese? And she was like, hi, like this, like super excited because she thought I spoke Japanese. And then immediately I was like, no, I don't speak Japanese. Sorry, I just know how to say that. And then she didn't speak English. Fortunately, we both speak some Korean. Well, she speaks Korean very well, and I spoke a little Korean. And so since then, that was our form of communication was in the Korean language. Okay, so I went a little bit off on our matching ceremony. I wanted to just share a little bit about it because I believe that the heart that Father was trying to portray to us was the essence of my matching, which is relevant to all of you, which is, if you have the heart of purity, of goodness to do what is best, then God will support that. Whatever you do, whatever it looks like or doesn't look like, or you think should or shouldn't look like, you probably aren't seeing the whole picture because God is in the in-between, weaving his hands into your life. And you have to have faith that that is true. You have to have faith that God is doing that. And whatever you decide to do in the context of absolute attendance and faith to true parents, whatever you guys do will be it. That will be it. That will be the path. And so you don't have to overanalyze. And the reason that you're stuck is because you're overanalyzing things and potential outcomes. Let go and surrender. You can't control this stuff. You can't control what the right decision is. There's no way that you, with your human efforts alone and your analytical brain, can start to comprehend what God has in store for you. You can't. You can't. You can't. And so it just takes surrender. You don't know what's best. You have a general direction. Go in that direction and course correct as you go. But God will be there with you, just as God has been with us since the beginning. All right? Whew. All right. So let's move on. Let's see. Okay. So let's go a bit into these overall kind of guidance points. I just shared my story. And I'm going to go more into guidance on, based on my experience, but also based on helping people through this process. And also what I've learned from father and mother is that, number one, I'm going to talk about internal preparation, fitness, finance, and schooling and career. Okay. Hope you dig that. So the internal stuff, internal is vastly larger than external. From the atom to spirituality to the universe, the invisible, the immaterial is vastly larger, incomprehensibly larger than the external matter itself. Okay. So that perspective, in fact, the internal nature of things impacts the external world more than the other way around. So that's why I always say internal comes first. Always focus on internal first over external, because your external world will be manifested, created based on who you are. What you do, what you have, will be created by who you are internally. What you are, what you have, career-wise, life-wise, possessions-wise, will be determined by who you are at the core, your internal nature. Okay? So the caveat, or the dilemma, is that we focus so much of our attention on the external world. Just look at conversations that you've had, right, with friends. Hopefully you have good friends of faith, right, that talk about important things. But the general narrative and conversation of our society and world is what? Go to school, get a good education, hustle life, make money, got to do this, got to do that, got to work out, got to get fitness. All important, yes, absolutely, at times. But if we're focusing 100% of our efforts and attention on something that is actually 99.9999% not even existing, then it's like we're reversing the tides, and it's not, it's just, it misses the point completely, right? External is more impacted by internal than the other ways around. Internal impacts external more than the other way around, all right? A faith in God, true parents, and the blessing is what is needed. If you're going to ask me point blank, okay, internally, what do I need to be ready for the matching blessing? I would say have a faith in God, true parents, and the blessing. A faith, and have a conviction level of more than 50%. Why do I say that? Because the reality of conviction and faith is not a black and white thing. You don't have faith or don't have faith. It's how much do you believe in that thing? Because sometimes you really believe God exists. And sometimes, to be honest, you just don't even know, because you're stuck in your head, because you're depressed, because you're feeling low, and you don't even know if anything's real. You don't even know who true parents are. And then sometimes you're on top of the world and like, man, God loves me so much. I love true parents, and the blessing is where I want to go. So it can't be a black and white thing. This is why some people can go gung-ho, hear, okay, God, true parents, for years, and then fall off the deep end pretty soon after. Why? Because they had belief, yes, but it was like, 20% belief, 30% belief. And when I say at least 50%, because if you have two people, this is what I've observed, it's not a mathematical formula, guys. It's generally, if you have two people that are blessed together that have more than 50%, of conviction level in this blessing, in God, in true parents, in faith, what happens is that over time, you guys will start to gravitate towards expanding that conviction more and more and more, and being more curious and being more faithful and trying new things to understand God and true parents in deeper levels. But if you have one person that's like 100% convicted, and you have one person that's 1% convicted, what happens? It's a mess. There's no more than likely the person, they're going to be gravitated towards one or the other, right? Or meet in the middle, which is not an ideal situation. Ideally, there's both of you guys are like, yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm like 80, 90% convicted in my beliefs about God, about true parents, about the blessing. And that's enough. Just have the conviction level. And if you don't have the conviction level yet, then seek it, find it, decide about it. Sometimes conviction is just a decision to be intentional and say, you know what? I'm tired of living on a fence about God. I'm tired of living on a fence about true parents. I'm just going to go all in 100%. You ever meet people or see people in our faith and you're like, man, that guy, that gal, he's 100%. Don't you admire something about them? It's like he's 100% in, and he doesn't care who's watching, who's not watching. If you want to be like that, you decide. You're just like, I'm going to convict myself. I'm going to put aside my ego, my persona, but what people think about me or don't think about me. I'm just going to go all in with this. Then decide. And the second thing that I would say is required, highly recommended, to be internally ready would be sexual integrity. Why do I say this? Sexual integrity is not some fad word. Sexual integrity is the correct use of our sexual organs that God intended for Adam and Eve to have from the beginning. The blessing itself is sexual in nature. Think about that. The five steps to change the blood lineage are sexual in nature. So we can't leave sexuality and the way in which we individually use your sexual organ out of the picture. It is through sexual integrity that you learn how to direct your sexual drive, your sex energy, which is a good God-given thing, not a sinful, nasty thing, a good thing, and use that for your spouse, for God, to have a family, to give to your husband, to give to your wife, not to use for yourself. And with sexual integrity comes a lot of very nuanced, very important character traits and personality traits that are helpful in a relationship, like mood regulation, like understanding yourself, self-awareness, observation, like reporting, like give and take, right? Like just being able to understand how your body, your hormones, your mind work, and your emotions so that you can direct them in a healthy way. So that would be my catch-all like thing. If someone said, if someone said two things that would be required to have internal preparation, I would say a faith in God, true parents, and the blessing, not a perfect faith, a faith. And number two, have sexual integrity. All right. Sexual integrity is a massive conversation that a lot of people are struggling with. I mean, it is the backbone of suffering. If suffering had a backbone, it would be the backbone of suffering is sexuality. I would recommend check out the High Noon podcast. I'm actually on that podcast a lot of the time. It's just search for highnoon.org or Love Life Legacy podcast, and all that content is really good and helpful for you guys. All right. So we can spend more time together there. Okay. So let's go on to health and fitness. Ooh, I wonder what you guys think I'm going to say about this.
You guys need to really work out three times a day and drink lots of water. Drink lots of water.
I am so sick and tired of people telling me to drink water. It's like every time I ask ChatGPT anything or look, Google search anything, it's like the number one thing to drink lots of water. Like, I know. It's such obvious. I'm not going to give you guys that obvious advice. All right. So here's what I'll say about fitness and health, physical attraction, especially people are wondering about like physical attraction and finding a spouse. If you need to be physically attractive to find a spouse, it means you're attracting people that you shouldn't marry. If you need to be physically attractive in order to attract a spouse, it means you're probably marrying the wrong person for the blessing, for eternal life. All right? Think about that. Why? Because it's an external thing. It's something that if you base your entire relationship on, can fizzle within a few years. Something could happen. People get pregnant. People get overweight. People change over time. People get dad bods. Like, you can't guarantee that the basis of your relationship, if it's physical attraction, is something that's going to last beyond a few years. So no, it's an unwise decision to base a relationship off of that. Okay. Hope you're with me. But physical appearance is helpful for first impressions. Now with this, whether this is a fallen trait or a God-given trait, I have no idea, but for whatever reason, humans are wired for first impression. So when you see someone, we make very snap decisions on if they're worth pursuing for ancestrally speaking, or we're just going to like, they're not even registered as a potential spouse. So that's what I would say is like the caveat of the only time that I would say physical attraction is actually practically helpful is in first impressions. All right. Which is not that hard, by the way. So let's get into this. It's not that hard to take care of yourself. And for women, honestly, like, just be you. This is my advice as a dude. Like, just be you. Just be you. Be you. Being you is beautiful. Don't try to be like other women. Here's the thing about beauty, though. This helped me change my relationship with my wife a lot, actually. The definition of beauty itself is that it is unique. For something to be beautiful, it has to be unique. Because if everything looked the same, it wouldn't stand out as beautiful. And so if every woman is trying to be like every other influencer, fitness model, or whoever, actress, then guess what? It's no longer beautiful because it's not unique. And so to be truly, truly beautiful and to attract the right man that's going to see you as you, it means to be you. It means to wear whatever you like. It means to be you. It needs to look like you. And if you're attracting a man that only will consider you as a spouse because they've been brainwashed and inculcated by what women should or shouldn't look like, then they're probably not someone you want to be married with, to be honest. Sorry. Okay, so women, be you, because being you is beauty. So what does unique mean? It's you. It's just be you. It's just be who you are. My wife does this thing where she really loves these sweatpants, okay? There are these like blue sweatpants. They're super comfortable. They were super expensive and she loves them. And she thinks they're stylish. So she'll wear them in the house and out of the house. And I'm just like, honey, these look like, it looks like you're wearing sweatpants. Like they don't look like fancy pants, even though technically they are. They look like sweatpants. And she's just like, they're comfortable and I feel comfortable in them. I was like, all right, whatever, you know? She doesn't dye her hair. She doesn't never got an earring. She's never got an ear piercing. And so when I see that in the beginning of our relationship, I had so many like external judgments about her. Like she should wear this. She should get her ears pierced. That would be nice. She should do her makeup this way. But over the years, I've completely changed my mind to be like, she's beautiful because she's who she is. She's beautiful because she's unique and she leans into that. And that is beautiful because if she, as an Asian woman, started dyeing her hair brown like every other Asian woman in Japan and Korea, if she started getting a face job like other Asian women, if she started doing the things that, then she would be like every freaking other woman in Asia, which is not beautiful. It's actually kind of gross as a man, to be honest. It's gross and it's not attractive. And if it was attractive, it means I have something wrong with me and I need to change my own mindset about women are, okay? All right, that's my opinion on the matter. Okay, I've never talked about this stuff. Take it or leave it. I already told you guys you can leave after your parents' quotes. So if you're still around, that means you want to hear this stuff. All right, I'll stop being insecure and just let it all out for you guys. Is that cool? All right, so that's my advice for women. Unique is beautiful. And actually changed my, if you're watching on YouTube, I changed my messaging with my wife. You see her name? It's just beautiful. She's beautiful. That's her name in my phone. Because every time she messaged me, it just says beautiful. Yeah, that's it. Okay, for men, here's my advice. For men, it's pretty simple. Don't have a mullet. Just kidding. That's a Jim Gaffigan bit. Just don't have a mullet. Oh, that's good. All right, men, be presentable. Just be presentable. And you're better off than 80% of men, to be real. Like if you're just presentable, it's not that hard. Spend 2 hours. Here's my homework for you guys. If you think you're unpresentable and you just don't care about, especially while you're finding a spouse, like make this time, just spend 2 hours, watch some videos, or if you don't like watching YouTube videos, go and look at some blog articles or whatever. Spend 2 hours, look about how to be presentable as a man. That's it. It's 2 hours. That's it. I'm not asking you to subscribe to anyone or like spend some time. You will learn more than 80% of men on the planet about how to be stylish. This is especially true for you American men, because American men are terrible, terrible, absolutely horrendous at style compared to Japan, Korea, most European countries, Latin America. The countries I've been to, Latin America, are pretty stylish, right? Especially if you go to the airports. It's pretty horrendous when you come back to America and all the men are in sweatpants and flip-flops, right? But, okay, so finance. Let's get into finance and money. If you need money to find a spouse, then you're attracting people that you shouldn't marry. Clear? Yes. So, you know, it's interesting because like a lot of the like influencers, especially like money gurus, they're really like, there's this emphasis and narrative in like the online culture that in order to attract a good, like the right woman, you have to have money. The thing is that they're looking through a lens of what's important to them and their priorities, all right? They're not trying to find an eternal spouse inside the context of the blessing that also has a shared faith in God and your parents. That's not what they're looking for, all right? So it's a moot comparison from what they're advising and what we're trying to do. So in the context of eternity, if you're finding a spouse based on how much money they have or will make, then they're not somebody you should marry, period, end of story. That's not what should be the focus. And also, money is finite. Money is uncertain. What happens if they don't make money anymore? Stress. That's what happens. Okay. However, caveat, having clarity about finances is very helpful in preparing for marriage, in a relationship. Clarity, not certainty, clarity. Just being clear about your finances. What I mean by clarity is math over emotion. If you guys can tattoo this to your forehead for the next week with henna or something, math over emotion. This is a concept I just invented before this, math over emotion. And the reason I say this is because most stress around finances are more perceived threats than reality, okay? More perceived than reality, more emotional than mathematical. Follow the math, don't follow your emotions. What I mean by that is that you're not gonna be homeless. You're not gonna be on welfare. You're not gonna be poor, especially if you're working hard. Like there's no chance if you work hard and that you'll not make it. There's no chance. In any country, in any circumstance, you can make it, you will. So the reason people get stressed about money in particular is because they're putting emotion over math. If you just do the math, you will be fine. You will make it. You'll be able to pay rent. You'll be able to get a car. You'll be able to do all the things. You'll be able to pay for diapers for your kids. Kids are not that expensive, by the way. That's a narrative that is falsely portrayed by a lot of people because they don't want to have kids and they want to justify their reasons to not have kids. So they'll say, oh, children are expensive. They're so expensive. I can't have children. My life will be ruined and my financial. No, it's a narrative. It's a justification. Children are not expensive unless you make them expensive. And usually they become expensive when people put them in private schools, right? Which can be expensive, yes. But that's usually the thing, or daycare. Schooling is the thing that makes children very expensive in some cases, but it's not a requirement to put your kids in daycare or in public school, all right? Just saying. Okay. Math over emotion. So when you're feeling emotions about finances and money, stop, pause, write it down in your journal or talk it to someone about it or pray about it in the Chongqing one, whatever it is. Realize that you're being emotional. You're letting the best, you're letting the emotions and the fallen nature get the best of you, and you're projecting anxiety and stress into the future that's not real. It's perceived threats that are not real, right? So this is a mindset that's helped me tremendously, is just doing the math. Is like, everything will work out. Everything will be absolutely fine. I don't have to worry about anything. Okay, cool. And if you're in a situation where you're like, oh, in my country, whatever, just do the math for you in your own country. Yeah. It's impossible to make financial content for everyone. Number one, because everyone's situation is different. And number two, everyone's from different countries and has different situations and tax laws, etc. So that's why I don't talk about money a lot. It's because it's super, super granular and case by case. But these are overall concepts that I think are really helpful. Okay. All right. This is regarding the blessing. If you're asking me how much money should you have, $3,000 US dollars cash, or whatever the equivalent in your country is. $3,000 US cash. Why? It means you're in good standing. It means you can save more than the most majority of people. And because that's about the amount that you would need to go to Korea to receive the blessing, $3,000 cash. Pretty simple. And on top of that, the bonus is that if you have $3,000 cash, you have more money than 50% of your peers in America that are in their early 20s. 50% more money. So you'll be all right. Okay. So what I recommend doing is becoming hyper observant of your thoughts and feelings around money and how much time and attention you give to it. Like if you're always like thinking about money and worrying about money, that's okay. Like that's fine. That's a process that we go through in life. That's called surviving. Like that's part of living, right? But it's not okay if you're not going to stop and observe that and say like, okay, maybe this isn't helpful. Maybe I'm not seeing something. Let me get some perspective. Let me get some guidance. Let me do some math, some calculations. That's not okay. That's not okay. You can't let your emotions and thoughts get the best of you. Like take a pause and notice how much time you're thinking about money and just change your relationship with money. What could it look like if you were excited about your financial future? What could that look like instead of anxious? What would it look like if you loved budgeting and loved finance and loved calculating your taxes and calculating all the things and having absolute organization and control? What if you loved money? What if you loved giving money to people instead of it being a chore to give to your tithe to your church or to donate? What if it was like an absolute joy and you felt, I have too much money, right? What if you felt that? You have too much money. Like I said, you have $3,000 cash, you have 50%, you're richer than 50% of people in their 20s in the US. That's just in the US. You're probably more like 80% richer than 80% of all the people in the world in their 20s, probably more like 90% richer than 90%. So you're that top percentile of people with money. And with that perspective, attitude, I was like, I have too much money. I got too much money. I'm going to give it away. I'm going to donate. I'm just going to give people money randomly, right? Yeah. So my point is, imagine if you could go from a scarcity mindset to an abundance mindset, or from fear about money to excitement or lack of enjoyment and dreading it to actually enjoying the process of money. All right. Okay. So let's go into schooling and career. Thank you, sister who reached out to me asking about this. I've never thought about these concepts really like this until now. Okay. Schooling. So my real perspective on schooling and career is probably too much for this podcast. And I say that because it's too much for you guys to handle. Let's just be real. But if you want to hear my real thoughts on this, then you can reach out to me and I'll lay it on you. But I think I'll get in too much trouble. I think if I really told you guys what I thought about schooling. So, but you have to understand for context, I went to university, did graduate. I went to that 1 year program of BTA, which is like I homeschooled, which I actually didn't do anything the whole time except read DP and Hunduke. I went to public school in Korea, right? I went to GOP, which is a, you know, Korean language program in Korea. I homeschooled. And then before that, I was in elementary school in the US until I was 8 years old. And so until I was 8 years old, I didn't know anything. how do I say this? When I was eight, my mom took me out of school because I got in trouble. Like my mom's a brilliantly protective and very connected person. Like she's really in the lives of me and my brother. And so when I was eight, I got in trouble in school because I called a kid gay. I called a kid gay. I didn't know what that meant. I just called him gay because everyone else was calling people gay. So I called this kid gay. He told on me one time. I called a kid gay one time and I got in trouble, went to the principal's office, and then they called my mom, and then I was removed from my school and to homeschool. So my mom started homeschooling me because she didn't like that I was in the environment that, whatever reasons. And then I homeschooled for a year. I did nothing the entire year, first year of homeschool. I did absolutely nothing. And it drove my mom crazy. I remember she tried to like sit on the couch with me and like teach me stuff, like as good parents do at home. Say like, all right, sit down, Benji boy, Benji Bops, as she calls me, Benji Bops, have a seat. We're gonna homeschool. And I'd be jumping up and down on the sofa. I remember this, just like jumping down. And I'd jump off the wall and like do like a flip onto the, and then she's like, she's like, how many times she threw the book across the room and just like, all right, I can't do this. So I did that for a year, just doing nothing, playing video games and Pokemon cards. And then I went back to school, right? I think for like a year or something. Anyway, so when I was eight or like nine, I officially started like a complete homeschool thing, right? Until I was 12, I went to GOP, and then and I went to public school when I was 13, a Korean public school, and then I homeschooled until university. Yeah, and then I kind of finished my homeschooling. And so there's an interesting lesson I learned that really changed everything for me is until I was 12 years old, until I went to GOP in Korea, I didn't know how to read, all right? I didn't know how to read until I was 12 years old. And that's surprising to some people. Let me explain. I could read stuff, but I didn't understand anything that was going into my brain. I could stare at a page of like Magic Treehouse for like forever, it seemed, and I couldn't comprehend what was going on. It's kind of like how you can read Korean, but you don't know what's going on, that kind of thing, you know? And so I would not know how to read. And so I was thrown into this environment when I was 12 where people are going to GOP from like New Jersey, New York, New England, all over the world, Europe. People are educated. And these people are on track to like go to major universities across the world. So people are smart. They know their stuff. They know how to do math. I didn't know how to do math. I didn't know anything about history, nothing about Korean language. And so we did our midterm exam in Korea and in GOP. And what they do in GOP is they do a midterm exam, I think every few months, and they post the results in ranked order of who got the best first place and who got last place on the public school board publicly for everyone to see. So when it comes out, all the kids were all like 12, 13 years old, gathered around to see how we did. It's like first, oh, look at this person got first, second place. Look who got last. Benji Uyama, second to last place. I think it was like 40 students, second to last place. It was like 39 out of 40. All right. Mortified. I was mortified. They were making fun of me. I was crying. I was crushed by this experience of being humiliated like that. And I was like, I can't believe this. I cannot believe that this happened. Can't believe it. And so I determined that's not happening again. Never happening again. It wasn't like a decision. Like I had to succeed. It was like sink or swim kind of situation. I have to be better at this. I have to be. And so the next midterm that came around, I studied. I did all-nighters for weeks on end, just staying up all night studying. I learned how to read, comprehend. I learned history. I learned Korean. I learned how to do math. We didn't have ChatGPT, by the way, back then, or internet. So I learned all this stuff. And I forced it down my brain's throat. I forced it. I just bit my teeth and grinded through this entire experience. And then we did our midterm exam, did my best. Results came, posted on the board. Benji Uyama, second place. All right. I was proud of myself. I was proud. Tearing up. I was proud of myself for that. And the important thing that I reflect on now is the lesson I learned from that experience, all right? And I would say that there's two lessons I learned from that pivotal experience for me. Is number one, I can do better than everyone if I work harder. I don't have to be smarter. I don't have to be the smartest, but I can work the hardest and I'll beat most people, right? And that belief has stuck with me forever. Number two, lesson I learned is that I can learn anything at any stage of life. Even though I'm late in the game of learning how to read and do math, I can still learn anything. And so that belief has served me very well. So it's like after Korea, 18 years old, getting blessed, I decided to learn Japanese and Korean. Like I spoke like maybe 10% Korean because of my experience in Korea, but I didn't speak it for years into the blessing at all, right? And so I was like 10, 15% Korean. So I was like, going to study Korean. I spoke zero Japanese, absolute zero, except for that one question I asked my wife at the matching ceremony. Zero question. So, but I didn't even question, like, am I going to learn Japanese? It's like, I'm going to learn Japanese because I know I can. Because I've had the experience of learning things as a 12-year-old that seemed like people should learn when they're 5 or 6 or 7, right? And so my belief is like, I can do anything. I can learn anything. And that's true for everyone. But for me, it's an ingrained lesson that I learned from a very young age. So I'm sharing this, guys, my experience with schooling, all to say that my perspective on school and career is pretty unique, I think, because of the experiences I've had. And I don't, let me say this. Now that I'm raising kids, now that I'm living life, especially in America, and everyone around me in our neighborhood, in our like town is 100% focused on grade point averages, getting their kids into private schools. I'm more convinced than ever before that schooling is overemphasized and other more important things are underemphasized. That's all I'm gonna say on the matter. There's a massive overemphasis and disproportionate collective focus and energy in our entire freaking world on school, so that you can get a career, so that you can make it in life, so that you can get a mortgage, so that you can pay off your mortgage. For what? For what? It's ludicrous. Is it important? Yes. I'm not saying it's not important. Again, but think of how much attention we give and energy we give to schooling and career and where am I gonna go? Where am I gonna live? What am I gonna do, all right? So after raising kids and being in this environment, I'm more and more convinced every day that we're way too emphasized on career and schooling in our families, in our society, right? In every country, by the way. This is not unique to America. I mean, just think about Korea, for example. Think about Japan, for example. Think about any country that you can think of. Yeah, people care a lot about getting their kids to make money and make it in life, right? And then I'll end this section on this. You don't have to get an education. You don't have to. You can if you want to. And this is what I tell my children, all of them. Got a son, 10 years old, daughter, Ira, 8 years old, another daughter, 2 years old. I tell them, you don't have to get educated. How many parents tell their kids that? Only this one. I say, you don't have to get an education. You can if you want to. It's a privilege. You get to get an education. And it's a completely different paradigm. Because kids are forced from a very young age, this narrative, you have to get an education. It's your number one important priority in your life is to get educated. Why? Why? So that you can get a good job. Why? So you can make money. Why? So you can be happy. Okay, the premise of that thinking is wrong and flawed. The baseline understanding of what we're doing here is wrong, all right? Is it important? Yes, at times. Is it super important? Yes, absolutely. But is it worth all of our attention and time to think about? No, especially in the context of the blessing, spirit world, God, your parents, all of that. That's all I'm saying, all right? And I'm gonna get in trouble for this, and that's fine. All right, you don't have to get an education. You can if you want. Just remember what I said about internal over external, and you'll be okay. So in summary, let's finish this up. Okay, so career specifically, I think that make a decision. Like, kind of like you're choosing a spouse, you make a decision based on what you feel is the best choice to go. Like, just make a decision. And the reality of career is that most people pivot and course correct as they go. And the only real situation where you make a decision about career and you, I want to say have to, but you're more likely going to go down that road for many, many years is probably going to require a long degree, like 8-10 year degree, and training, something like becoming a lawyer or doctor or anything of that nature. But barring that, assuming you guys are not going that route of requiring a very long intensive degree, if that's what you want, that's again, my point, you don't need to, you get to, you can, if you want to go down that road, you don't have to. You don't have to choose a career right now. This is what I told his sister that reached out to me. You don't have to choose what to do right now with your career. You can choose because you want to, because you get to make a decision. And then as you go, you will probably meet new people. You'll have new experiences. You'll apply those skills and experiences and relationships and networks to new areas of life. You might pivot a little bit. But the reason that usually we become so consumed by one-time decisions, like I have to decide now, is because of the desire I think humans have for permanence. We like to have the idea that if I decide this thing, then it's going to be so forever, for the rest of my life, and I'm going to be set. It's a desire we have for permanence, which is a very ingrained biological ancestral desire. I want permanence. This is why people buy houses, even if they can't afford houses, even if they don't even like the house. They will buy a house, why? Because they believe that it provides permanence, and it does to an extent. But actually, the bank owns it for many years. But anyways, besides the point, I want permanence. That's what we have. And so if you can notice this in your own thinking, like, I'm just trying to have permanence because it's a human desire to have permanence. But the reality is that nothing in life is really permanent. Nothing. Even from a very biological lifetime perspective, you choose a career, your career is going to end. You buy the house, someone else is going to own it next when you die or when you sell it or whatever. All this stuff that you think are permanent are not permanent from just a biological perspective. But then you add on eternity, the immaterial, the spiritual, then we enter a realm where that stuff is so minute. And when you look at life through that, it's like, I can't even believe I was concerned about that. I can't even believe. And this is why as people age, as you'll become in your 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, you will start to care less and less and less and less about that stuff because it'll just be minute. You'd be like, I can't believe I was worried about that. The stuff I was worried about in my blessing at the beginning, like she should get ear piercings and I, or she should dye her hair or not dye her hair, or she should stop wearing those sweatpants I don't like. You guys know what I'm talking about. At a certain point, you're just going to accept it. You're going to accept it. And if you're going to accept something eventually, you might as well already accept it. You are going to have to accept your spouse 100%. Now, or in the future. At some point, you're going to be on your deathbed, or she will. Someone's going to be on their deathbed, and you will not even have an ounce in you that's going to be like, oh, you know, I wish she would change. I don't like the sheets she's lying in right now. I kind of wish she would wear different pajamas when she's dying. No, you're not going to care, because eventually you're going to have to accept everything about her or about your husband. Everything. You're going to have to eventually. Right? So you might as well do that now. You might as well. Your parents, those things you hate about your parents, whatever, you're going to have to accept it someday. When they're on their deathbed, you're going to have to accept. So you might as well now. Doesn't mean they shouldn't change. Doesn't mean they shouldn't grow. Doesn't mean you shouldn't encourage them to grow and be better. You can absolutely do that. Absolutely should do that. But you can do that with love and acceptance at the same time. Just as a good, loving parent would say to their child, "Child, I love you with all my heart, but you got to stop that behavior, man. That is not loving. Stop that." It's a loving thing to do, but you can accept them fully as a child that is growing, as your spouse, as your parent, whoever it is, right? Okay. So summary, you can do this. You can do this. Summary, be present and take one step at a time. Don't chase permanence or certainty. Permanence being like the desire to make a one-time decision and it lasting forever. Things change. You might change. Who knows? Just take one step at a time. Make today the best day ever, and you will have the best life ever. That's it. Okay? Life is uncertain. You got to do that. Don't sacrifice today for potential future outcomes. Make this day the best day ever, and you will have the best life ever. Because if you can have one best day ever, it means you can have 1 week, best week ever, right? If you can have 1 week, you can have a whole month. If you can have a whole month, you can have a whole year. If you can have a whole year, you can have 10 years. If you can have 10 years, you can have a whole lifetime. So if you have one amazing day, fantastic day, just focus all your attention on the day. Be grateful for the day. Be grateful for the efforts. Be proud of yourself for putting out everything on the table, pulling out stops, all stops, going Super Saiyan mode, and just making the best day ever. Then you will have the best life ever, all right? I mean this with all my heart, guys. I love you so much. If you want to, read Chufaler's Hundoke, I'm going to give it to you guys. I'll put it somewhere down, or our editor will put it down somewhere in the link below. And you can check that out, the rest of Chufaler's speech. And also, if you want to email me only because you want to receive, have some give and take about your situation or your life or anything like that, or have a recommendation for an idea for a podcast, then email me at benjiuyama@gmail.com, benjiuyama@gmail.com, and I will respond to you if I like you. Just kidding. I love you guys with all my heart. I think you know that. All right. God bless you. Bye.
Bye-bye.